Bone-chilling greetings, everyone. The tunes are courtesy of Bobby Mackey, and I, of course, am your host, Tessa Morrow.
Now today it's a different place, all the same with a new face, with strange mysteries hanging in the air. People in their sane minds swear they see you today. Are you looking for the love they took away? Everyone knows that you couldn't bear the pain, so you took your life in the pouring rain.
Thanks for stopping by and making Paranormal Prowlers podcast part of your morning, day, night, graveyard shift. Whenever you listen and wherever you are listening from cozy cottage nestled in the mountains to a boat out on the water, from Pakistan to Afghanistan, from the Bermuda Triangle to the Arctic Circle to Times Square, and yeah, everything in between, it is greatly appreciated.
Round of applause. This week's city shout out goes to...
And let me tell you, folks, you are going to need your passport because this is a doozy. Nicosia, Cyprus, Asuncion, Paraguay, Longview, Texas, Brownsburg, Indiana, Casablanca, Morocco, and Springfield, Tennessee. I told you you need your passport for different countries. Woohoo! This is a part one of a two-part series. Bank robberies, getaways, gunfights, cold-blooded murder, kidnapping. It's all coming up right now. Watching true crime a lot, I often see that the family that the criminal was born into were kind, loving, respectful members of the community, a lot of the times, and were equally horrified when the truth came out about their loved one's extra activities, the bad apple. But what if the whole family were rotten, decaying apples? Enter the Barker family. They were a group of people who robbed, kidnapped, and killed together. And many people, mostly law enforcement, would be brutally murdered. And I'm obviously getting ahead of myself once again. A gang would be formed and it would include a list of thugs. And we're going to talk about those list of thugs that line up today. And this includes Kate Barker, better known as Ma Barker, her sons, Fred, Arthur, Lloyd, and Herman Barker. It wasn't all family. When one Barker finds himself behind bars, he comes face to face with a man named Alvin Karpus, better known as Creepy Karpus. And I've mentioned him before in an episode or two. And a friendship, a very weird friendship, is created. And that bond would continue on after the men find themselves free as birds. And that's when the trouble really begins. I want to talk a bit about the lineup of thugs. First up is the sole female, Ma Barker. Now, her husband, or ex-husband, should we say, and father to all of her children, George, is believed to not have taken part of any of the crimes you are going to hear about today and next week. He was not a saint. It's thought that he either tried or did make a little money off of the crimes, like after the fact, but he himself was not a part of the crimes. I mean, hell, he wasn't even around. He abandons mother and children. Maybe he was a fortune teller and saw that each one of these people in his family would become complete shitheads. I would leave too, seriously. I'm against abandonment, but come on. Now, after George leaves, Ma is living in total poverty. Not to say things were perfect when he was around, but boy, did happiness decline when he left. She shacks up with some loser who didn't know what having a job detailed, and was just as equally broke as Ma, not bringing anything to the table. Now, in certain families, if a family member was in trouble, they would simply, or maybe not so simply, turn to their family. Well, look at Ma. She had several sons. You'd think that, oh, maybe one of them could help. But reaching out to them was not an option or possibility. as most, if not all, were incarcerated during this time. She must have been one proud hell of a mother. Now, it's really uncertain what Ma Barker's role was in all of this. Many believed that Ma came up with the gang herself and was in no way, shape, or form an innocent woman. Others, including Alvin Karpis and another member who was part of their deranged gang, well, they claimed that Ma couldn't even plan to make a simple meal like a breakfast, let alone plan the heists, the robberies, and the murders that would be committed. But hello, this wouldn't be the first time someone who was part of a crime would try to lessen the guilt and activity of a family member or friend. And that's what the Barker and Karpis clan considered one another. Family. One dysfunctional, murderous, greedy family. Once out of prisons and penitentiaries and jails and wherever they were incarcerated, Ma Barker and her lover, a man named Dunlop, joined forces with the Barker sons, and the gang is formed. Up next is Herman Barker. He was arrested a couple of times for highway robbery, and in the Old West, that would be a crime punishable by hanging, am I right? Now, in late August of 1927, Herman finds himself in Wichita, Kansas, just committing a robbery when he has a confrontation with the police. This will turn deadly when he shoots a police officer in the face, killing him. He is badly injured, but gets away. He ultimately takes his own life. Now, I read his obituary on findagrave.com. Criminal. Born in Aurora, Missouri to George and Kate Barker. Herman's life of crime began at an early age when he and brother Lloyd Barker organize a youth gang which dedicates itself to petty burglaries. Herman is arrested for robbery in Joplin, Missouri, and is released to the care of his mother in 1915. After spending most of the 20s in the company of the Kimes Terrell gang, robbing banks in Texas, Oklahoma, and Missouri, Herman Barker gets flagged down by policemen following the robbery of a Newton, Kansas store. Barker kills a police officer, but is seriously wounded as he attempts to speed past a roadblock. He turns his gun on himself, apparently committing suicide. Lloyd Barker was arrested in 1921 for vagrancy. He spends time in Leavenworth more than once. One time includes for robbing a mail train. Now, that's another offense punishable by hanging back then, in the Old West days at least. Now, while this record of his was certainly not a clean one, he seemed to be the more mild Barker out of the boys, with the youngest Fred being the most dangerous and deadly, but more on that soon. Lloyd Barker later on goes to join the army as a cook during the Second World War. He was employed at Fort Custer in Michigan at a prisoner of war camp. He receives an honorable discharge and also a good conduct medal. Seems like he really wanted to put the past behind him. Now, in 1949, Lloyd finds himself living in Denver, Colorado. He's married, trying his best to live an honest life, and dare I say, a normal one? Well, that's short-lived, though, when his beloved wife murders him, which lands her ass in the Colorado State Insane Asylum, which is located in my hometown, just a few minutes away from me, in Pueblo, Colorado, a place that I have driven past several of times throughout the years, and a location that is worthy of its own episode in the future. And I read his obituary on findagrave.com. Criminal. Son of Ma Barker. After being paroled from Leavenworth Prison, where he was serving a 25-year prison term, he worked as a cook in a prisoner of war camp at Fort Custer, Michigan during World War II and received an honorable discharge from the Army. He married and worked as an assistant manager of a bar and grill in Denver, Colorado. On March 18, 1949, his wife shot and killed him in their home in Westminster, Colorado. She was subsequently placed in an insane asylum. He is buried in Elmwood Cemetery in Brighton, Colorado. Arthur Barker, often referred to as Doc, took part in two kidnappings, and you're going to hear more about that in next week's episode, part two. He's also responsible for some murders. Now, on July 18th of 1918, he is arrested for stealing a car in Joplin, Missouri. Less than 2 years later, on February 19th of 1920, he successfully escapes jail, travels to Oklahoma, and proceeds to successfully commit several robberies. My lord, he just can't stay hidden, can he? This gets him a short sentence in the Oklahoma State Penitentiary, lasting for just a few months. Slap on the wrist if you ask me, but whatever. That's just a mere tiny little punishment for this hardened criminal. Now, on August 25th, 1921, Barker and three other men are in the process of terrorizing and robbing a woman in Tulsa, Oklahoma, when a security guard, a night guard watchman, he comes upon the scene. Thomas Sherrill sees the woman in trouble, and he doesn't hesitate to step in to help her. He shoots at the intruders, but as the men flee the scene, they shoot back and kill him. Barker and another man are arrested and handed life sentences, serving time, once again, in Oklahoma State Pen. He would be paroled 10 years later in 1932. So much for a life sentence. Once released, instead of going the straight and narrow path to an honest living, Arthur reunites with his crooked-ass family, and he did not skip a beat. He is convicted of a kidnapping. Again, you'll hear about that in a while. And he is sent to Alcatraz. In 1939, he tries to escape and terribly fails as he loses his life in the process. He was 39 years old at the time of his death. Find a Grave shares this. Criminal. The third son of Kate Ma Barker and a member of the Barker Gang, Doc Barker spent much of his life in and out of prison. In January 1935, he was arrested for the last time for his role in the 1934 Barker Gang kidnapping and ransom of Minnesota banker Edward G. Bremer and was sentenced to life in prison at Leavenworth Federal Penitentiary. He was later transferred to Alcatraz Federal Penitentiary later that same year. On January 13, 1939, he led an escape attempt with fellow inmates William Martin, Rufus McCain, Dell Samphill, and Henry Young, making it out of prison and down to the shore of the island. The escape ultimately failed when prison guards opened fire on the inmates. During the shooting, Barker was mortally wounded and died later that day. He was buried in an unmarked grave in Colma, California. Cenotaph can be found next to his parents and brothers in Welch, Oklahoma. Fred Barker, the youngest Barker's son, and shockingly the most deadly and dangerous of them all. He, along with Creepy Karpus, were the founders of the Barker Karpus Gang. And as a young boy, he was part of a gang called the Central Park Gang. In 1927, he is arrested for burglary. And this is where he and Alvin Karpus, well, they cross paths. He would be released in 1930. And together, Fred and Karpus would be responsible for several deaths, including a sheriff and an Arkansas police chief. During one of his many getaways, Barker murders a man named Oscar Erickson, a passing motorist who was simply at the wrong place at the wrong time, and he paid for that with his life. His list of murders and crimes will be discussed later on. It's a nightmare, truly. I will read parts of findagrave.com, but not its entirety, as it talks about things that will be mentioned soon enough. Criminal. The Barker gang is rooted in the family of Arizona Ma Clark Barker and her four sons, Herman, Lloyd, Arthur, and Fred. In 1910, George and Kate moved the boys to Oklahoma, and here is where Fred and Doc joined in with juvenile criminals known as the Central Park Gang, doing stints in and out of prison most of their child and adulthood. The Barker-Karpus Gang robbed several banks throughout the Midwest and committed numerous murders, but two high-profile kidnappings elevated their status with the FBI. In 1935, a Florida map with Lake Ware circled on it was found during a Chicago raid of gang members leading federal agents to Oklawaha in January. There, they found Fred and his mother Kate hiding out in a rental house. It is stated that the gun battle that lasted 4 hours was started when Fred stepped out onto the front porch with a machine gun and began firing on the government agents. The house was riddled with nearly 3,500 bullets in the shootout. Afterward, federal agents found machine guns, rifles, pistols, and approximately $14,000 in cash. The Barkers' bodies were taken to Pyle's funeral home in Ocala. Next up, while not a bloodline family member of the Barkers, Alvin Karpus, better known as Creepy Karpus, was damn well considered part of the family, and he was just as tough and bad as the rest of them, if not worse. Alvin was considered public enemy number one. In 1926, Karpus is sentenced to 10 years at State Industrial Reformatory in Hutchinson, Kansas. This was for attempted burglary. Now, at some point, he escapes and he's free for about a year. It's a long time. He steals a car and lands himself in Kansas State Pen, where he meets, you guessed it, Fred Barker. Fred is released first, and once Alvin is out, the two criminals, they reunite. He was a career criminal who in 1934, as a young man, had his fingerprints professionally removed by a crooked doctor. In a memoir, Karpus mentions Kate, aka Ma Barker. Quote, "Ma was always somebody in our lives. Love didn't enter into it, really. She was somebody we looked after and took with us when we moved city to city, hideout to hideout. It is no insult to Ma's memory that she just didn't have the know-how to direct us on a robbery. It would not have occurred to her to get involved in our business, and we always made it a point of only discussing our scores when Ma wasn't around. We'd leave her at home when we were arranging a job, or we'd send her to a movie. Ma, she saw a lot of movies." Again, he is portraying Ma as a peach, an innocent lamb that was sent to be slaughtered. But why would an innocent person have so many aliases? That alone is just like, what the hell? So she was born with the name Arizona Donnie Clark. I don't know. It has a ring to it. I like it. That's a cool name, Arizona. But she would go on to use several aliases, including Ma, Kate, Rita, Arizona, and Ari, among others, I'm sure. So here's something that's interesting. With his criminal background, it's absolutely no shocker that Creepy Karpus had spent a lot of time in different facilities that had bars. And I'm not talking about saloons, my friends. Those wonderful jail cells. He spent a lot of time in Leavenworth Federal Penitentiary, Kansas State Penitentiary, and McNeil Island Penitentiary. The latter once being home to mobster Mickey Cohen, the Birdman of Alcatraz, that being Robert Stroud, of course, and Charles Manson. An odd encounter with Charles Manson at McNeil Island Pen took place, most likely leaving Karpus shaking his head. Karpus wrote this about the cult leader and notorious murderer that was Charles Manson. Quote, "This kid approaches me to request music lessons. He wants to learn guitar and become a music star. Little Charlie is so lazy and shiftless. I doubt if he'll put in the time required to learn. The youngster has been in institutions all of his life. First orphanages, then reformatories, and finally federal prison. His mother, a prostitute, was never around to look after him. I decide it's time someone did something for him, and to my surprise, he learns quickly. He has a pleasant voice and a pleasing personality. Although he's unusually meek and mild for a convict, he never has a harsh word to say and is never involved in even an argument, unquote. Due to the kidnappings, which you will again hear about in the next episode, Karpis would be sent to Alcatraz, and he would actually go on to become the Rock's longest-serving inmate, serving 26 years in Alcatraz, and eventually being paroled in 1969. Once released, he was deported back to his native country, Canada. In my opinion, he should have stayed locked up. He was what you would consider a serial killer, responsible for several deaths, but in 1973, he makes the move to Spain, where he dies 6 years later. FindAGrave.com shares this. Convicted criminal. He gained notoriety after becoming the Federal Bureau of Investigation's public enemy number one as a member of the Karpis Barker gang, dating from 1931 to 1935. Besides Karpis, the Karpis Barker gang was comprised of a notorious Ma Barker, and her sons, born Albin Francis Karpowicz. He immigrated at the age of two from Montreal, Canada to Topeka, Kansas, with his Lithuanian-born parents. A schoolteacher dubbed him Alvin Karpis for pronunciation purposes. As a youth, he was sickly and was diagnosed with a leaking heart. He begins committing burglaries by the age of 10. At 18, he was convicted of attempted burglary and sent to a Kansas reformatory to serve a sentence of 5 to 10 years. He escaped after 3 years and eluded recapture for a year, living for a time with his parents in Missouri. Police found him in a stolen car, and he was sent back to the reformatory, but was quickly reassigned to the Kansas State Penitentiary, where he formed a friendship with Fred Barker. Released in 1931, the two men joined forces and committed a series of well-planned shop burglaries. Crime peaked during the severity of those very hard times of the Depression years. When Arthur Doc Bark was released from prison in 1932, the trio, along with various other acquired gang members, who were at the time 12 men, turned their attention to robbing banks, trains, post offices, and payroll shipments. Karpis, who possessed both a superior intellect and a photographic memory, later described 11 bank robberies in 1932 alone. He masterminded the gang's crimes so cleverly that some of their crimes were blamed on other gangs that proliferated during the Depression era. It is uncertain how many deaths Karpis was personally responsible. After the capture or deaths of the other members of Karpis Barker gang, Creepy Karpis is finally apprehended by a swarm of FBI agents in New Orleans, Louisiana, on May 1, 1936. FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover made the official arrest. Karpis received a life sentence for his role in the 1933 kidnapping of William A. Hamm, Jr., president of the Hamm Brewing Company. Though eligible for parole after 15 years, Karpis served more than 33 years in federal penitentiaries. He was an inmate at the federal prison on Alcatraz Island longer than any other convict, from August 1936 to April 1962, except for 6 months at Leavenworth Federal Prison in 1958. On Alcatraz, he was assigned for many years to the culinary department, where he worked as a baker and a cook. A skilled and conscientious worker, he earned the respect of inmates and prison guards alike. When Alcatraz closed in 1963, he was transferred to McNeil Island Penitentiary in Washington State, where he became a model prisoner. He worked as an office assistant, lived outside the prison walls, and occasionally led visitors on prison tours. Wow. In 1969, supported by recommendations from former prison guards and officials, he was finally paroled, and since he was not a United States citizen, was deported to Canada. Back in Montreal, he proceeded to lead the life of an infamous but reformed man. He granted interviews, gave lectures, appeared on television programs, wrote an autobiography, and even appeared in beer commercials. In 1973, he relocated to Torremolinos on the Costa del Sol in Spain. Initial reports that his 1979 death was a suicide were prompted by the discovery of sleeping pills at the scene. However, the Spanish coroner's report stated that the cause of death was heart failure. He married once and was divorced in 1935. The couple have a child. His autobiography, titled On the Rock, 25 Years in Alcatraz, is out of print, but a hardcover edition is a collector's item at over $200.
And that concludes another fantastic podcast. Legend has it, if you don't tune in, I'll be returning to haunt you. So make sure to tune in for the next episode.
Today you heard all about the lineup of unruly, dangerous, murderous thugs. Next week in part two, you will hear about two shocking kidnappings, several murders, and a little about the heroes who were taken way too soon in such a horrendous way, and much more. Did you enjoy this week's episode? Listen to the others, they're all phenomenal. Haven't heard every single one yet? No worries, hit up any of those spooktacular podcast platforms such as Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Deezer, GeoSavin. Basically, wherever you may roam to hear your other spooky podcasts, you'll probably find Paranormal Brothers podcast lurking in the background. Thanks, everybody, and
I will see you next week.